Welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, sponsored by Shooting Performance Institute. Jim has a couple long-range shooting classes. Dates are October 25th and 26th. So there is still time to register for one of these if you have one of those November rifle tags, that late season stuff. Get out there, get tuned up. My dad just went through it again. He's got an elk hunt coming up in Utah. Wanted to make sure he was as dialed as possible. Like I said, Shooting Performance Institute, October 25th and 26th. The long-range shooting class is going on. You can always sign up or get all the details on shootingperformanceinstitute.com. After a long absence, hopefully everybody enjoyed the reruns. And in fact, one weekend you hopped on with my dad.
Yeah, that was fun.
You did the show there for me. It was a great Elk-tember. I'll call it Elk-tember.
Elk-tember. Yeah, yep. It really was. It was really good. We had your archery cow hunt first, yep. Which was awesome. You know, it was typical.
Work.
It was a lot of work. It was a lot of fun. Got to see some amazing country, but it's typical hunting. You know, yep. You're out there with a cow tag, and what did we see? 14 bulls the first day?
Yeah, I think that very first morning we counted 14 bulls.
And yep. We didn't see a single cow. Nope. 14 bulls. And then it just kind of ramped up from there. And
you know, that's that thing, and we'll talk about it. So fair warning to everybody, if you hate elk and hate elk hunting, this probably isn't the episode to listen to, because we are going to get into all things elk and everything we experienced out there. Our tags, you had a bull tag, I had a cow tag.
Yeah.
They were in complete separate areas of the state. One was that far northwestern corner, and one
totally
was
totally different territory.
Way out there near Ely. We found cows on my hunt.
Oh, yeah.
But it's that old challenge of, okay, they're 2 miles away. Now we've got to go get on them through thick, steep country. By the time you get there, they're either not there, or I did have an opportunity. One day got to just over 70 yards, and she happened to kind of go into the timber, and all I had was rear end and guts, and I thought, I don't want to do that.
Don't want to do that. Yeah. No, there's definitely, I'll tell you, that area would be fantastic for spot and stalk antelope, though. The amount of antelope we saw was fantastic. Your hunt was awesome. We had a great time. We had good friends out there. Your dad, your brother.
Armando.
First time he wanted to experience what a hunt was like.
Yep.
So Henry invited him on his hunt. He came out. Absolute trooper, and I think he's kind of hooked.
Dove right into the deep end.
He did.
I mean, archery elk, it's not an antelope hunt. We'll put it that way.
No, not at all. That one was awesome. That was a good hunt, even though it had to deal with a little bit of fire.
Oh, fire.
Yeah, but luckily it didn't get too far.
Supposedly they stopped, for everybody listening, I'll go ahead and cough it up. I had a tag up in 062 in the bull runs and that north end of the Independence Range. Was it the Cottonwood Peak Fire?
Yeah, there was like three or four just out of that Battle Mountain area that all lit up at the same time, and they called it, had four different fires going. I can't remember which one was it that into that near that reservoir.
And supposedly they stopped that by Bull Run Reservoir there.
Yeah.
I have not been back up there, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Not the extent.
Yeah. I don't know how far it pushed into the bull runs, but a similarity between my hunt and your hunt was the water. And we'll get into the challenges we faced on your hunt in a minute. But on my hunt, there was so much water and green up everywhere that, you know, guys think of like, oh, well, you're going to sit in a blind at a guzzler or something. First off, there's no guzzlers up there.
No.
Because there's so much water. And I knew that when I put in for it, but the number of elk is what I was like, well, there's plenty of elk up there. I'll just treat it like a spot and stalk hunt, which is what it was. We know a couple guys that were successful that went into that bowl up there and pulled some cows out. But we also ran into some people that had the same struggles we did. One day they're in one canyon and there's a ripping creek in there, so they're happy. You push them out of there and then they're half a mile away in another steep canyon with plenty of water and feed.
Yeah.
There's just so much landscape to cover up there.
And it's steep landscape.
Yeah, it's not flat.
It's not flat. So when you would spot, you know, a group of cows or a cow or something and start in on it, you're dedicated.
That was your day.
That was your day. That was your day. Cause the hike was not just, oh man, I'll be back in 20 minutes. Yes. It was like, I'll see you at lunch or if that type of thing. Cause it was some big country, but it was cool, man. It was, there was just, like you said, the water was in every single canyon we went to. There was water,
and not like a trickle.
No. Yeah. This is like full on creeks running down. So, you know, and then we had rain a few days, so that didn't help the situation on both hunts.
Oh yeah. Thunderstorms. Now let's go water on your hunt. We wound up in a similar situation, but it did not start out that way.
No. The 4 weekends prior to getting out there and hunting, very little water. I mean, a lot of the creeks, I think we had hiked into 22 different water sources, either a spring, a guzzler, or an existing like cattle trough or one of those big old yellow digging machine tires full of water.
Right.
And we went to like 22 of them, 17 were bone dry. The areas where there was water, the elk had just absolutely littered that countryside with tracks and sign. And so, you know, we had a pretty good plan going into the hunt, thinking, okay, we're going to hunt these areas where we're seeing all this activity near this, near these water sources. And then we got there and it was changed. Totally different.
Remember the morning before your hunt, or maybe was it 2 days before?
Yeah, because we got there 2 days before the hunt started.
Yeah, that day we went into those water sources and there was still, I mean, fresh bull sign.
Oh, yeah.
Right there on those. And we thought this is going to be a slam dunk. We'll be done on day one. And then the next day, what happened?
Yeah, it completely changed.
Yes.
We had rain for what, like 4 days?
Yeah, four or five days. Yeah,
just on and off a couple times. It came down real hard.
Yep.
As well as the ranchers out there turned on their springs, like, you know, they turned on some of the valves, and these areas that didn't have water now all of a sudden had ponds.
Yep.
So
that was the one I wanted to talk about, because I make the comment, nature always gets a vote.
Yeah.
So when you're out there and you get these thunderstorms and it's like, okay, I'm going to be flexible. I'm going to adapt to this. What I have yet to experience on a hunt until yours was the ranchers moving cattle and opening those wells.
Right. Yeah.
That was a new one for, I've dealt with rain on hunts where you're like, ooh, man, okay, now there's standing water in roads. Like they're going to be everywhere. Yours was the double whammy of not only the thunderstorms, but ranchers going in, I think, what, day two or day one of your hunt?
It was day one. They were moving cattle. They had a couple of their ranch hands out there with the big trailers, and they were moving cattle to...
And opening wells.
Opening wells, moving cattle into new areas, shutting the wells off in the old locations, and just kind of, you know, moving their cattle, which that's what they do. They don't follow... calendars, like, oh, let's not bother the hunters. I mean, they got this.
Oh, yeah.
This is a business. Food on the table. It's a business. And I mean, I don't begrudge them for that. I mean, that's what they got to do. So it was like, okay, time to make some adjustments.
Yeah.
And then it became kind of like a mule deer hunt where you're just spotting, stalking. And that was it. And, you know, we saw some really awesome animals.
I have been so behind on Instagram posts and everything. I'll post up. I may slap together a bunch of the footage and some of the bulls we turned up. It's a phenomenal area.
Yeah.
It is one of the gems of elk hunting in Nevada. We found good bulls every single day.
Yep.
I don't think I'm lying when I say that.
No.
Every day.
I think we only had one day where we didn't, and it was the day I was out with Logan. One day we didn't see a single elk the whole entire...
Oh, the day before I got there for the second stint. Okay.
Right. That was, you know, the only day we got out there. And I mean, reasons for that were pretty obviously.
Yeah.
But that was the only day. Rest of the time we were spotting elk morning.
Every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can go into it. We're coming up against a break here. But when we come back, let's go into that first... Because we kind of separated the season. We had a first week, and then we took the middle part off and then went back for the end.
For the end.
So we'll go into that first half of the hunt. When we come back, stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Look, it's going to start getting windy. We're going to start getting those fall storms. Temperatures are going to change. Make sure you get in touch with Battleborn Tree Service. Take care of your trees before you head out for those late season hunts or before we get those freak early winter storms that we are known for in Northern Nevada. And next thing you know, some of your prized landscaping is laying in a pile in the yard. Give Mike a call, Battleborn Tree Service, for hunters by hunters. Now let's jump right back into elk timber, elk hunting. We talked about some of the water challenges, Dave, and just the, you know, that hunting elk spot and stalk. It's difficult. It's very similar to mule deer, except the big difference, mule deer will bed in like sage. And so it's kind of like you can see them. And even though they're bedded, it's like, okay, I'm going to put a plan together.
Right.
Elk like that thick timber to bed in. Man, when they go in that, you're blindfolded throwing darts is basically what you're doing.
I mean, a lot of that timber we're having to deal with, I mean, by some lucky chance, you got within range of an elk in that stuff, like walking on cornflakes.
Yeah.
your best shot was, what, maybe 10 to 15 yards?
Yeah, you didn't have a lot.
And when we were out there hunting, they weren't in bachelor groups anymore. Mm-mm. The bulls had all shed their velvet.
Yep.
They were getting snarky with each other, you know, kind of separating out, breaking apart, not really hanging out with the cows yet that first week we were there, but they were kind of hanging out in the satellite area around cows, kind of a deal.
Same general vicinity, but not tied to them.
I mean, if they walked off, the bulls just, you know, stayed doing his thing.
Yeah.
And it was wild. But the one thing, you know, we noticed was that as the hunt progressed, they got more and more nocturnal.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that started getting really tough.
Yep.
That got really tough.
We noticed that window sliding because those, well, you had an opportunity on day two.
Yeah.
So we had a really cool stalk and thought we were done on day two. But I noticed over that course of those first like 3 days, day one, okay, we're glassing them up. It's like 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. By day four, it was like, oh, okay, they're gone by 8:30. It just started getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And we'll go into why our kind of hypothesis on why that happened.
Right.
But first, let's go through the really rainy day when it rained all day. And it was a surreal experience for me hunting in Nevada because it was like one of those, like a coastal Oregon elk hunt or something.
Yeah, it was.
We were in clouds and rain all day, and I thought you were done on that second day.
You and me both. You and me both. When we spotted those two bulls, one bull was chasing the other bull out of the trees into a big bowl.
They were getting feisty.
So then they just started feeding in that bowl, and we thought, oh, let's do this.
Yeah.
So you and I started trudging through the trees, working our way over to where they were. And miraculously, when we popped out and got near that little rock face, there they were standing, feeding.
It was like 140 yards, I think.
Yeah, it was like 140 yards. And they were feeding right there and they were working their way towards us. And we were like, oh, this is good. This is good. It's drizzling out. You know, we're getting wet, but we don't care because we're hunting.
Yeah,
we're fine.
And you're in that like 200-yard bubble where you're like, oh, something's about to go down.
Right.
So I'll lay here and get soaked. I don't care.
Exactly. Yeah, you were all curled up in your gear. And so then they started fighting. These two bulls started like racking antlers. And at first I thought, oh, they're just, you know, playing around. They're like two kids with a sword. Yeah. You know, they're having a good time. Then they got down below in that draw where I couldn't see him. So then I hiked and I kind of snuck over.
I stayed put at like 140 because I didn't want two sets of boots tromping through.
And I worked my way down to where I could see that draw. And when I saw them, the bigger 5-point, that really nice symmetrical heavy 5-point.
He was a heavy,
I
just think
he
never grew right. He was a mature bull, but didn't have that sixth on him.
No, he was just a heavy, beautiful 5-point. He was facing uphill, quartering away from me, and I was like, oh, that's perfect. He was just chewing on a bush. The other guy was right next to him, and I ranged him, and I'm like, okay, we got this.
You were at 60-something?
It was like 60, 63 yards or something. I was like, okay. So I knock my arrow. I get it ready. I'm getting ready to draw, and that stupid littler bull,
the raghorn,
just takes his antlers and just completely jams them into the side of the guy and just kind of moves them. And then they just went to town.
You said it got nasty.
It was nasty. Yes. Yeah. So the bigger bull did that weird, like I was telling you, like elk jiu-jitsu move and flipped the other one onto his back and then rammed his antlers into the side of him and dragged him for like 10 feet. And it was just like, holy, and I got front row seats to it. Yeah, I'm like, this is the
You got
coolest.
An arrow on ready to ventilate one of them, and you're going, hey, okay, fellas, quit fighting.
Come on, quit fighting. Let me get this taken care of. You know, so that was all cool. And then they got up fighting some more. Then they kept running. Then they shot down that draw, and I thought, we're done. That's it. They're gone. 10 seconds later, they come running back up the draw, the big guy chasing the little one. They get up above me and they're fighting. Then they shoot back down again. And I'm like, what in the? This is like, there's like a bunch of 3-year-olds or something. This is cool. And then they disappeared. No sound, no rattling, no nothing. I thought, they're gone. They're gone. So I got a little further in and I kind of got into this little depressional area and got in there. And then all of a sudden I saw antlers in front of me and the big bull is walking up the hill right to me. And I was like, oh.
Perfect.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Ranged that one little tree that was in front of me at 27 yards. The big guy came up to just on the other side of that tree, and I'm behind a big piece of sagebrush. Everything in that little spot that I was in was probably waist high for me or a little bit more of all the bush cover.
Okay.
It was a mix of shrub and sagebrush and stuff. And he came up, and he looked down at the smaller bull. I'm assuming I couldn't see him. I'm assuming that's what he did. And I brought my bow up.
When he barked?
Well, that's when he turned and just stared at me.
Oh,
but I don't
okay.
think he could see me with all the material around me.
Right.
Because he just sat there staring and staring and staring. And then he did that super loud bark.
Yes.
Trying to get me to move. And I didn't. And had my bow up ready to rock and roll. And then he looked back towards that
small
where he
bull
came from.
Yeah.
And then he turned and just started walking parallel to me straight up the hill. So I drew and I just held my 30-yard pin on his chest. But the problem was there were bushes between me and his chest.
And you were looking at an upward
angle.
And I was looking
up at him. And he just never opened up. And I wasn't about to shoot an arrow.
Send one through the bushes.
Through the bushes. I mean, that's just a whole bag of stupid, you know, because I don't know how far he is on the other side of those bushes. From where it looked to me, I'm like, he's walking right against him. But
you don't know.
You have no idea. And then later, after he walked up to where you were, like right next to you.
I thought I was going to get run over.
Yeah. He came right to you. And then I tried to get up to get to where he was again. By then, he
was in the trees.
He'd gotten himself. And those trees were so bloody thick, man.
Oh, yeah.
Once they're in that stuff, it's so hard to find them. And then standing up there, I saw where you were. And then the little bull pops up, and he's, like, right in front of me. And he just walked right into the trees as well. So that was the second day.
That was day two.
And that was so exciting.
And especially being cold and wet in that, you know, just that gray drizzly stuff. I didn't feel a drop of rain as soon as we got on those bulls. It's like all of your senses are just glued to that.
Yeah.
And for people listening, I wish we had like a diagram or something. It's funny. I heard all the calamity going on. And I thought when I heard that, I thought you had killed one because I couldn't see.
Yeah.
As you slipped over that finger and down, I lost sight of you. And I knew enough to like, okay, I'm not going to go look at like I'm here until I know exactly what has happened. And I heard all the ruckus down there and I thought, Dave just killed his bull. This is awesome. And then as it kept going on and it came, I could hear it like coming back up the draw. And I'm like, well, a bull with an arrow in him isn't running back towards where he was. What the heck's going on?
Right.
I'm laying there and I can't see you. And that's when, same thing as you, I saw those tips come up out of the sage and I went, no, that bull's still on the hoof. Like he's coming up and he stopped right there in front of me. And I'm like in the fetal position, curled up, like kind of side eyeing at him. And I thought, oh no, like he looks fine. Dave's going to shoot him right here. and he's just going to flatten me and run me over. Like, and I kind of had that like, oh man, I hope Dave doesn't kill him right here, 'cause I'm going to get stomped. And then he kind of moved off and he stood for me. I think when he moved off before he went in the trees, he was at like 40, whatever we range, 42,
yeah,
40, something,
yeah,
yards.
Something like that.
And he was just broadside, and I was going through it like, man, I wish, I don't know where the heck Dave is. I wish this bull were, like, I wish Dave were right here and he could smoke him right now. Yeah. But it's funny because the different, similar but different experiences, and we were only separated by like 60 yards.
Yeah, at the most.
But in that terrain where it's like you're down in the draw, I'm up on the finger, like, I don't know where you are. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. Multiple times I thought this bull is dead.
Yeah.
And then when you came
yeah,
up and I was
too.
Like, oh, dang it. What yeah. happened? Yeah.
Yeah. Stupid brush. But
yeah,
it was really cool having them that close and just barking at you. And it was just, that got my juices going. I was like, all right, this is going to be an awesome hunt.
Yeah.
Awesome.
This is going to be done with.
It's going to be good.
So, hey, we'll get more into the latter half of that first part of the hunt, and then we'll talk about that second portion of the hunt where, congratulations to Logan, he killed his first animal with
yes,
a bow.
With a bow.
And it was a nice bull. I'll post that picture on Instagram for everybody.
Yeah, third
that
antler.
Was, yeah.
That was weird.
It was really weird. A three-antlered bull.
Yeah.
So there you go. Hey, do not go anywhere. Nevada Backcountry will be right back, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you missed the first two segments of the show, we're kind of recapping our elk season this year. Both Dave and I had tags. You can always go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab there. All the past episodes are available. And as soon as this goes to air, this entire episode will be on there. So you can hear all of the peaks and valleys, the woes of chasing elk when there's water everywhere. We just left off at the end of that last segment with our day two, raining on us, thought you were done, got within 30 yards of a really good bull, just never got a shot. From there, I would say it became almost gut check time on the hunt, where it's like, you gotta just go through the motions.
Yes.
Because it seemed like it got infinitely harder after that second day.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd say everything kind of just shut down on us.
Yes.
I mean, not that we were having any bugles, because we heard no bugles.
Oh, that's
during
another
the first
challenge.
Week.
Yeah.
No bugles, no mewing, no nothing. But yeah, after that second day, going into the third or stuff, it just, you're right. It's just like, got to wake up at 3. You got to get your stuff dialed in. You got to get out there. You got to start glassing. It just seemed as if the elk, cows and bulls, they weren't coming out of those trees.
Yes.
They were just staying tight. You would see them less and less and less.
Yeah.
In the morning, you'd see them. Well, it was still kind of dark out, and you're just kind of glassing like, oh, I think I see something here. I think.
But and you think it's going to be the same thing that you just went through the last 48 hours where
right.
you're like, okay, we got 2-3 hours to get on these.
Right. No, it was wild how that yep. shifted. And as soon as that sun came up, you could literally watch these animals turn and just booger straight into the trees.
Yeah.
And it's just 30,000, 40, 50, 70,000 acres of thick
timber.
Pinyon juniper and timber and
yep.
mahogany and everything else. And you're just like,
they're gone.
They're gone.
Oh, and to back up, Dave, you went on a stalk. That was day one, right?
Yeah.
You went on those on the other side of the unit.
Yeah.
There's a really, really good bull over
man.
There.
Really
you
nice.
Went on a stalk and ran out of daylight. So that's why I say by that third day, I was still riding high, because it was like, okay, day one, Dave went on a stalk on a really big, big 6-point bull. That one on the other side of the unit. That was
the end
of day one.
That's right.
And so then spirits are high. Come day two, that storm settles in. But we got on, you had that opportunity on there. So it was like, going into day three, I was pretty confident, like, today's the day.
Yeah, because day three was when we saw that massive 6x6.
Yes.
With those cows.
Yep.
He wasn't paying a ton of attention to the cows, but he was sure raking the bejesus out of that tree.
Man, and I'll like, post that video,
yeah,
too.
It was
yeah.
awesome.
Day three, I was like,
day,
oh, man.
Day three, yeah. We were having a stalk every day. So it was
yep.
like, this is going to come together. It's going to come together. And that one there, they stayed out a little bit longer than normal. And we were able to, I think we got about 100 yards or so from them. And then they just poof. They
disappeared.
They went into those trees and they were gone. So, but then after that, day four and on, until we headed home for a couple of days to regroup and get more supplies and stuff.
We were out there for 8 days on that first go.
8 days on the first go. And then those last 4 days were just
brutal.
Dead. Just dead.
Yep.
Just absolutely dead.
I don't think we heard, oh no, that's not true. On that first half of the hunt, what, day six or seven, I think we heard our first two bugles.
Yeah.
Those were the first bugles of the
canyon,
hunt.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, those two bulls talking to each other.
And I think I cow chirped at that. At that point, I was like, okay, I'm going to try a little calling. I cow chirped. The second bull sounded off, and we thought, okay, maybe it'll come together now. And then we were right back to nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. And we were having a hard time even spotting them. We had been in there enough at that point. You're talking about a week of hunting every single day. We thought we knew where everything was, and we were just having a hard time even turning stuff up by that last portion there, by that day seven, day eight. It was like maybe you get a glimpse at sunrise. There was the one day we were driving, and we were going down because we were going to hike in there and glass and everything, and right off that main road in there, there's that raghorn and a bunch of cows standing right off the road, and it was like, Oh, there they are.
There's a bull.
And they were going into trees.
Oh, yeah.
And it was still dark. Let's get into the nocturnal thing. And I got my theory on it. I think it aligns with yours.
Yeah.
We came across a fairly well-known, I'm not going to use any of the names of the guides and outfitters that were out there, but there were two fairly well-known guide services out there.
Yeah, camped right near us. So we knew we were in a good spot.
Exactly. We knew we were, it's like, okay, if these two outfits are in here camping, like, yeah, this is where the action is. But one of those guide services was on an absolutely massive 400-inch, typical, just big, heavy,
giant,
clean elk. And boy, they were not letting him get away for a second year in a row.
No.
I'll put it that way. They had an armada of trucks and guys and
UTVs,
they were,
ATVs. Yeah.
They were living on that bull. And I'll give them credit. They did point our noses in the direction of those, a couple other bulls.
Right.
They just wanted us off that mountain though.
Yeah. And they were cool about it. They were really respectful. They were really cool. Like, hey man, you know, we've been hunting this guy for a long time and
should have been dead last year, but we had a slip up or something.
They're really cool about it. Like, man, if you guys don't mind, you know, and they pointed us in the direction of some other bulls that they had been seeing that none of their clients wanted. So yeah, we backed out and let them do their business. We did ask them, you got to show us a picture.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to show us a picture of this bull. And he did. And holy moly.
Yeah.
It was God.
Yeah.
Thing was huge.
I've never seen anything like that on the hoof. That was a solid bull.
Oh, yeah.
Again, I mean, hey, it's public land. We could have been, well, they talked to Jake and Logan could have been a-holes about it and said, absolutely not. Like, this is public land. We're hunting here too. But they were kind enough to cough up a couple other bulls in that 350, 360 class that they were like, hey, our client only wants this 400-inch monster. You guys, if you want them, here are these two bulls. Here's pins. Go over here. Okay, so we'll go do that. I will say both guide services were, you always hear horror stories of like, oh, these guys are doing this, that, and the other thing. Both of them, everybody we came across out there was cool and just like, hey, man, here's what we've turned up. If you guys want to go over here, here's where this bull is. The other guide service, and you really wanted that bull.
Oh, buddy.
He showed us a picture of a 6x1. He was a typical 6 points on one side and a single like 40-inch spike on the other.
And it was weird. It wasn't like a spike that went straight up. It was like he had his two main beams.
Yep.
The one beam, six tines
points
on it.
There. Yep.
The other one didn't produce anything.
Nope.
It was just, he was the coolest.
He was symmetrical. It just never,
he
it
just
was like
never
a
branched.
Saber or something.
Yeah. He just never branched the one side. And I was like, oh,
I'll kill that bull.
I'm killing that bull. Just the coolest looking one. But We just never found them, never got eyes on them. They showed us a video of them and said, you know, I was able to match the rock formation behind the bull to where we were. Yep.
He told us right
around.
Where to go.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't BS us. He said, nope, this is this pin. Here's the pin.
Yeah.
And matched the rocks. I'm like, well, this is where he took the video. So
he was in here at one point.
We checked that whole area and, you know, not like they're going to just stay in one spot, but we're hoping to at least get eyes on him so we could follow him. But he was awesome. That was just a cool.
I would have been
bull.
Super happy to see that thing on the ground.
Oh man,
yeah.
He
was a cool bull, but I think, and this is, I'm going to tie this back into the nocturnal thing. I think the pressure started to add up by the end of that first week, and you have two outfitting, two guide services in there with four side-by-sides, 3-4 trucks each service.
Yeah.
And just people camping on these bulls out there. And I think that was the big shift towards day 7, day 8, where it was like, maybe you're lucky to get a glimpse at like first light and then they're gone.
And that's how it was. I mean, you would see them at first light. And as soon as that sun started really expressing itself on the ridge there, poof, you literally could watch these things turn and walk straight into the trees. They were done. Whatever they had eaten, that was what they're going to eat for the day, and they were gone, and they were in the trees. But I agree with you. I think it's decades and decades and decades of being hunted the modern way, in a sense, as I guess modern would be, you know, people in pickup trucks and things that make a lot of noise. These animals have come accustomed to, okay, when we start seeing all of this activity where we're generally most of the year, we don't see any activity, and now we're seeing all this activity, and every once in a while, one of us disappears. something.
Where'd Fred go?
Yeah, where'd Freddy go, you know? I think they've just gotten to that, you know, it's like evolutionary, it's nocturnal time.
Yeah.
And they just
and it only took, yeah, it only took 3-4 days of that before they were like, we're done with this.
Oh, yeah.
We're going nocturnal. And to add to that, and I know they see ranchers' trucks and all that year round, but to have all that and then in addition, those first 2 days of the hunt, the ranchers being in there moving cattle, turning on wells and everything, I think there was just they felt the pressure. And they were like, nope, there are too many vehicles, too many. And the unit we were in is unique because large swaths are wilderness.
Yeah.
But to get to the wilderness, you got to drive through some of that prime hunting country and drive into that edge of the wilderness to start hunting. I think you are absolutely right. That's my gut reaction to the situation was everybody's coming in here on these roads to get back into the areas they want to hunt.
Yeah.
And those elk in that mid country were like, nope.
Yeah. It was tough that first week, but then we gave it whatever it was. We gave it like,
give it a break for about six days, something like that.
6 days. And then we headed back out for the last 8 days of the hunt.
Yeah. And we will get into that on the final segment of Nevada Backcountry, only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, proudly sponsored by Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, LegacySportsInternational.com. The last few minutes of the show here, Dave, let's see if we can cram in
a very exciting last week.
We can fast forward through. It was kind of much of the same when we got back out there. You got back out a day before me, and then I met up with you guys. Basically, what did we have? 6 or 7 days left in the season at that point.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I saw an issue there. We were kind of falling into the same routine. We were going to the same spot every morning, seeing animals.
Glass them up, try to get on them.
Problem was, we were too far away from them to get on them. And I said, this isn't going to work. We're not wildlife viewing.
Okay. you said that. Yeah, verbatim, you said that one morning.
I did.
Yeah.
I said, we're not wildlife viewing here. Yeah. Okay, we're hunting.
Yeah.
So this is being on the side of this mountain, just staring at elk every morning and every evening isn't doing us any good.
And trying to put together a 1,400-yard stalk.
Right, exactly. Until they figure out teleporting, we need to change our program. So, and that's what we told Logan, because That poor kid, his first year, congratulations, man. You friggin' stuck it out, and you grinded, and you did it.
Yeah.
Logan stayed out there every day. He was out on that mountain for 23 days.
Yep. Killed his bull on day 23. Three. Gosh, he was out there like a week before the season or something?
About the same as us, about 2 or 3 days before the season started.
Okay.
And, but he was way down in a whole nother area for about the first couple days. And then he got a hold of us and said, hey, you guys seen anything? And we said, yeah, we're seeing a little bit here and there. And he came up and camped with us for the rest.
He was pretty down in the dumps that last night.
Oh, buddy.
I gave him a little pep talk in the morning that with some graphic language that I won't use on air. But he said that stuck with him. And he went to the one spot and he got in the timber.
Yeah, that's what we told him. I said, if you want a chance at a bull, you need to get on that other canyon and get into those trees.
By sunrise.
By sunrise and just hunker down. And when you see those animals feeding along those tree lines, you're going to be 1,000 yards closer than standing on that far mountainside watching. And he did it. He stuck it out. He ran in there and he was successful.
You guys have, I think, AT&T.
Right.
So you guys had service. Let's go through the morning of Logan's text of, I got a bull down.
Yes. So that was awesome.
Yes.
So you and I got into a location where we'd been seeing some really good elk activity. And the night before.
That's right.
Had a really close call with another big
really
bull.
Really good bull. Yeah.
The only problem was he came cruising by where I was hanging out. Like
after legal light,
like it was almost dark.
Yeah.
And they came by and it's just, you just got to let them go. And you're like, okay, well,
We
know they're here.
And so we haven't spooked them.
Yeah. So we got back in there the next morning. Logan went up into the trees and we went to this other location and you went up onto your spotting location.
Up on a ridge.
Up on a ridge top. And I went over near the guzzler. And I mean, before sunup, we're talking probably maybe 4 or 5 minutes before legal shooting time, half hour before sunup, legal shooting time. Henry calls me and says, you got a bull and some cows coming in. It was like game on.
Yes.
Game on.
That bull ripped a bugle, I think, in his bed. And it, I mean, you know, in the dark, it's hard to tell distance, but I mean, it was loud. And I thought, I guess they were about 70 yards, 80 yards from me. And I thought I had hosed you because I'm thinking, holy crap, this bull just like ripped a bugle. I'm in the herd of elk. I hiked up to that ridge line in the dark, pitch black. And I thought somehow or another, I didn't spook them out of here. Like they're going to get out of their beds, start wandering around and they're going to step on me and bugger out of here. And I hosed poor Dave down at the guzzler 800 yards away.
Yeah. That first bugle, I thought, oh, okay. Henry didn't tell me he was going to bugle, but then I realized he did it again.
Yes.
Then he ripped another big bugle.
He was pushing cows.
Yeah. He had eight cows. You got a really good look on his left side of his antlers and how wide he was. He was very wide. And then he came into me and I got a really good look at his right side.
He had a bunch of extra stuff on
him. He had some junk.
And it was a real cool, unique. I mean, that's one of those ones where, like, you could pick that bull out all day long of a herd.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was palmated. Going back, like, the Royals and everything, he had a bunch of extra junk. He was palmated. He was so wide. Yeah, he was a great bull.
He was a good bull. So I see the cows, and I'm like, okay. And then I spot the bull, and then I just said, okay, I can't concentrate on the antlers. I just
don't look at them.
Don't look at the antlers, man. So they come in, and I thought they were going to come into the guzzler.
So did I.
And they must have already drank and then fed. And then it was like 6:10 in the morning. So I was within legal shooting time because sunup was like 6:18 that day.
Yeah.
They're coming in, and that lead cow, she knew where she was going. She was heading for the trees. The trees were
behind you,
100,
kind of.
You know, 80, 100 yards behind me. Yep. No looking at anything else. She was beelining for the trees, and she's dragging all the cows with her.
My heart sank when I saw that because I went,
so
Dave, you were positioned to where we thought they were going to go into the Guzzler.
Yeah.
And kudos to MBU. That was the Guzzler build I was supposed to, both of us were supposed to be on this summer. But man, kudos to MBU. That's a phenomenal location for that Guzzler.
Amazing location. Yeah. Amazing location for a Guzzler. The place was littered with elk tracks.
But my heart sank because I saw him go right past the Guzzler and I went, they're not going to go to it. And Dave's positioned on this one side of it, like to shoot them when they go to the Guzzler.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. It was brutal. I saw that and I was like, okay, change your plans. I saw the shooting lane that I had available to me. And I was like, okay, when he comes across this is I got to stop him and rip it. So the cows came across it. A few of the cows stopped and looked at the Guzzler like, hey, are we doing this or not? And then she just kept going. So then they turned. They turned and they went with her. Yeah. So he comes across and he gets into that window and I draw my bow. And just as he comes into the center of that window, I made some noise. I made kissy sounds and locked him up. He stopped in a heartbeat. He looked up at the girls and then he looked towards me, which he couldn't see me because I was hidden behind stuff. And I figured, I looked at him, I'm like, he's about 60.
Yeah.
He's about
60. He was in between your two ranged points.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So I was like, okay, he's about 60. So I put the 50 right below his spine, 60 mid-body, 70 at the bottom of him, and just held it, pulled, rip, pow. She goes off, and all I heard was that
hollow drum
sound. And I was like, oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
He took off. He shot into the trees. He went up that little hill and did his thing. And I thought, oh, full pass through. I said, that's got to be a pass through.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a pass through.
No, it wasn't.
No, it was not.
So for people listening, and I'm looking at the clock, Dave, this might be a to be continued episode to next week because, man, we've gone through basically almost 14, 15 days of hunting at this point, and we're just now getting to the good part. But believe me, the work started after the shot.
It was insane.
I didn't see the shot because of the way they went. And you had 2 points ranged. You had like a sagebrush and a stump or a stump and something.
I had a piece of sagebrush that was on the side of the hill. And then the second point was kind of way off to its left. So I didn't really use that one because off to the left, I wouldn't be able to determine like proximity to me.
And there was about, 20 yards of depth between the two?
At least.
And you thought he was closer to the farther.
Correct.
You know what I'm going to do, Dave?
You're going
to
do it.
I'm going to do it. I hate to leave people on a cliffhanger. We will do part 2 of Dave's bull hunt. So next Sunday, 10 to 11, we will wrap this saga up on Nevada Backcountry only on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.